Well, I'm not going to start the show as I normally do by doing the whole, you know, aloha, mud babies, because that will happen later on. Today's show is it's a very special show to me. I'm doing it with my friend Mark Germain, who you guys in the L.A. area may know as Mr. KFI or Mr. KABC. He is to me, and still to a lot of people, is the radio legend of Mr. KFI. Mr. KABC. It was a great show, and I wish you'd do it again, and I got to talk to him while I'm out here in Vegas. We went over to his studio. We did it there at his house, his studio, and we recorded it at the same time because we're going to use the same tracks. I'm going to be on his show because he does a talk show on his channel. We'll tell you more about that on here, and we're going to have it on the podcast. So this is the show in its entirety, unedited, just having fun, sitting down with radio should-be Hall of Fame legend Mark Germain. I hope you enjoy it. Here you go. Aloha, mud babies, pod people, and inhabitants of the planet Earth. It is I, your tiki leader, Steve Mudflap McGrew, sitting here with my guest, Mark Germain.
Now, am I your guest or are you my guest? We haven't established that, have we?
I think I'm your guest.
Generally, you're in my house, so you're my guest.
Exactly. That's what I'm thinking. So once you start your show...
Well, you know what? Let's just keep it the way you have it there. I like that introduction. But anyway, explain who I am, because no one who listens to your show... Would they know? No, because they're... Most of your listeners are like people who know you from Colorado, mainly, right?
Right. Yeah. But like you and your show, you find out I have people that listen in Sweden. How? Yeah. I actually have fans that listen all the time from Sweden and write me. I loved the show today. And miss
no me. Accent.
No. Well, I don't read it in accent, but obviously when it's written,
it has an accent.
Have you ever seen like people that write in like,
the best? Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
People can't speak English.
Exactly.
And you know, we're very accepting of people who make the attempt to speak English. And you hear about some places like the French.
Uh-huh.
If you go to France and you took like high school French and you're trying to communicate.
Parlez-vous français?
They think you're an ass. Mm-hmm. They just don't want anything to do with you, and they're rude. They're really rude. It's like, please, don't insult me by trying to speak my language. Whereas our culture, I think we're pretty good about, like, hey, that's a... And we always say this about someone who speaks another language is, well, okay, you know, Czechoslovakian, he's from Czechoslovakia. His English isn't that great, but then again, how good's your Czech?
That's
you know, how well do you speak Czechoslovakian? And so we kind of admire that people are multilingual, whereas we barely speak English, as it turns out.
Well, like you were saying, when you go out to France and you attempt things, I think when you travel, you have to learn those little rules of the country. Like don't even try to talk to them because it pisses them off. And like the first time when I was overworking in England, I left this giant tip on the table after dinner. I threw down a tip, and my friend took it off the table. He goes, what are you doing? I go, oh, it was great service. He goes, no, you left too much money. And I go, yeah, it was great service. He goes, no, see, here they think you're an idiot. Look at the dumbass. He over-tipped me.
Right.
And I go, oh, that's not the perception
in
of
this
what,
country,
a, what
yeah.
a great tipper. He goes, no, the perception is you're not very bright.
Yeah.
So you have to kind of learn traditions and things and people's ways when you travel.
Yeah. The British don't like it when we try to speak their language, as it turns
out. They don't.
No, they don't.
We jack that up, too, when I try to wear my jumper and my...
It's amazing how we... when we like talking about the British, for example, there is no one who I've ever met that has a British accent that I thought he's an idiot.
Ever.
That never happens. And there's got to be stupid people in the UK.
There's the Cockney. When you hear the Cockney accent, when you're like, what?
Yeah. Those Can you say that again?
Yeah, when you
like another language.
But sometimes that Monty Python thing, you're like, what did they say?
Right. Yeah.
And I think that maybe that their version of Alabama.
But even you'll see like a street fighter, you know, like a thug boxer from the UK, and he's got a British accent, and you're like, that guy must be really, like, I can't.
He's brilliant.
He's brilliant. Yeah, why, brilliant. Why is he wasting his time boxing? He could.
Well,
he
I'm
could
always be, amazed that everything is brilliant. That was the first time I was over there.
Oh, yeah, they like that word.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
That was brilliant. Brilliant. Well, they don't think I'm brilliant in America, but thank you.
Yeah, how do they like Southern accents in the UK?
They love it.
They do.
Yeah, they're not so much for Americans.
Right.
Which I don't know why, but they are. But if I'm at the comedy club, I have to say, from Texas. And they go, yeah, we love Dallas. You know?
Yeah, if they've seen it on TV,
yeah,
then yeah.
But right. If they go, this next comic's an American. There's perception has a whole lot to do with it, I think. Uh-huh, it's just uh-huh. That's why I always tell the MC, the compares, they call them over there, to say Texas, don't say
American. It's like in its own country.
Yeah.
Huh.
It is. Even over here, we realize that.
Right.
Texas is its own country.
That's true. Yeah, you're very proud of your Texas lineage, your Texas heritage, your...
You don't mess with Texas.
Don't mess with... Do you have that on your bumper sticker?
No, I don't. But everybody I know does. Because my family's all down there, and they live down there. And when I go to visit, they're like, why don't you come back? And I'm like, because it's hot, and it's muggy, and you right. have cockroaches the size of small dinosaurs. I don't want to live here.
But you
anymore.
Can buy a house for like $12, right? I mean, isn't it much cheaper to live there?
Yeah. And yeah. Like this house studio that we're in right now, this would be like, you know, a $4 million home in Texas. It might be here. What am I saying?
I thought things were cheaper in Texas.
That's what I'm saying, though.
I'm lost.
You said you could get it for $12.
Right.
I'm saying, yeah, this house that you would cost $12 down there.
Oh.
But it would be
here,
like,
it would be, yeah, I see.
Do you see what I'm saying?
Not really.
Not really. It's the same thing when I lived in California.
Oh.
It's when I wanted to buy a house in California.
Right.
I thought, okay, I can either go buy a, for the same price, a 5-bedroom house in Denver, or I can buy a 1-bedroom bungalow with neighbors that I can't speak to. So it's that price range.
Right.
For the same amount of money.
Right. See, I grew up in Southern California, so I moved to Las Vegas, which is where we are now, 3 years ago, I never lived anywhere else. And I didn't really travel all that much because of my job and because I don't like sleeping in other people's beds, generally. That's one of the reasons why we just didn't travel all that often. And so I don't know, like, what things cost in other places. And I'm always kind of surprised how things are either way more expensive or way cheaper. Like, you hear about crappy apartments in New York City that are 400 square feet. 400 square feet that go for $350,000, $400,000.
Location.
I get that. I understand the concept, but it still seems perverse. Like,
It is.
A doghouse is 400 square feet. How does a family of three live in a house 400 square feet? And yet, other parts of the country, I've heard in parts of like the Midwest and the South, you can get a really nice 2,000 square foot house for $43,000. Well, that doesn't seem right either.
Yeah. But I think we've learned to live bigger and want to live bigger. Doesn't it seem like if you ever go visit somebody that lives in the Midwest or a house that was
built... I haven't done enough of this, so I don't know.
Or even a house that was built in the 50s.
Right.
You'll go, where's your closet? Do you even have a closet? See, I think people have changed over the years. Like, you know, like, that's all you needed was a place for the 6 shirts and the 4 pair of pants. And now if you don't have a walk-in closet the size of a Winnebago,
right.
Who could live here? Who could possibly live in this... Yeah. But you know what I'm saying? I think people over the years...
How many illegal immigrants are here? Yeah, yeah.
So I think,
no one from this country would live in that.
Yeah. That was every home in the 50s.
Right.
Like,
right,
I remember
right.
my parents, they bought a house, I think it was built in 58, 59, and you just go, there's 2 bedrooms, and the kids have to all be in one room?
Yeah.
How? This is... Call social services now.
Yeah, right.
You know?
Right. Child abuse, exactly. My daughter is going to be starting college... in the fall, and we were given a pamphlet on, you know, things parents need to know. And one of the things it said is, this may be your child's first time living with someone else in their room. Like, really? I mean, it turns out my kid actually did have her own room Al throughout her life. But the concept that she might actually have to have a roommate, that
might freak him out.
It might freak him out. Yeah. It's like, what if we
did? Daddy, I can't sleep. She farts in the night.
Yeah. It's a weird time and place we live in, isn't it? Did you have an older brother and a sister, right?
Yeah.
And did you ever have to room with one of your siblings? Yeah. I did too when I was little.
Yeah, my brother and I shared a room, and she got her own because she's a girl.
Right, right, right.
That's just the way, right. How come she gets her own room?
But at some point, your brother moved out, and you got to have the room to yourself, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. That was like the greatest day of your life, or how
it was a combo day. It was one of those, yes, I have my own place, but hey, who's gonna jump on the bed with me? We had bunk beds, and I loved bunk. And I don't think enough kids enjoy bunk beds.
Right. Yeah. I'm with you.
Did you have a bunk bed?
Yeah. I had, and again, we lived in San Diego for a few years. And it was, I have three older brothers, so it was a three-bedroom house, which means the two youngest, and that was me and my brother Dan, had to room together, and we had a bunk bed for a while. And then at a certain point, your brother goes, I'm tired of the bunk bed, and then splits up the beds.
Yeah, because you could lift them apart and put them into two different beds.
Yeah. And so that happened for a while, and I remember thinking, no, I want to go back to the bunk bed, because I got the upper bunk. Wasn't that the better place to be with the upper bunk?
Yeah,
right?
That was like living in the penthouse.
Exactly. Yeah.
And when you had bunk beds, there were so many things you could do, like, you know, hang a sheet over it and make a fort, or, you know, just all the stuff.
Yeah. What have we done to our kids? What have we done to this generation?
I think we've done a lot of damage. Yeah. I know people don't want to think
that. You talk about this, right?
I think we've turned this generation into, and I've never seen the movie, and I don't know how I've survived without it, WALL-E. But I keep hearing how that have you seen the movie?
Yeah.
How we've grown to this society that just becomes the blob-like, you know?
Oh, that wasn't WALL-E. I think you might have your movies confused. Maybe it was. Where they're in space and the people do get fat and lazy and they're just in a chair the whole time. You're right. That is WALL-E. Okay. Sorry. Because it almost seems like two different movies. There's a part, half of WALL-E takes place on, I think it's Earth. And there's a little machine that goes around compacting trash. And then there's this colony in space. They're on a spaceship, and they're just fat blobs, and they can't. They've lost the ability to, you know, use their legs because they don't need
them.
Yeah. I forgot that is it's still the same movie. So it is WALL-E.
And that's what I'm thinking, that we're putting ourselves down path because I mean, how many people go tell your kid get up?
All right, I got to admit something.
Get up.
I have an 18-year-old and a 16-year-old. They don't know how to ride bikes.
See? I'm not saying that's bad parenting.
No, it is bad parenting. We, my wife and I look at each other and can't believe that our kids are as helpless as they are. My daughter, who's going away to college, I mentioned a minute ago, just last week learned how to use the washing machine. Because my wife always did.
And let me use one of their best phrases. OMG. Are you serious?
Yeah. I know. And my son, who's 16, just in the last year, learned how to use the microwave. He didn't know how to use the microwave. He said, how do I do this to me? I said, you're joking. And he said, no, how much time do I put on this? And it was, I don't remember what it was. It was something simple that he was trying to reheat, and he didn't know how long.
And what had he done to the years prior,
We, my wife and I are totally aware of the fact that we have totally infantilized our children. And we're now going to start paying the price for it because they're old enough now where they're either getting ready to go to college or they're driving or they're doing stuff. But yeah, no, we've been terrible parents, as it turns out. Yeah,
but you don't really notice that at the time.
No,
and that's one of the gripes that I've had with like people. I'm trying to, you know, people are like, well, they grow up so quick. They, you know, they're only children for a while, but they don't need to do anything because they need to do everything.
Yeah, right.
Because that's what being a child is. You learn, and then you become a teenager, and then an adult. It's not like one day you go, okay. You're not a child anymore.
Well, that's what we're faced
with. But I don't know anything.
They don't know. And fortunately, they're good kids and they get good grades. And so, you know, they're not problem kids and they don't, you know, they're not getting in trouble and getting arrested and, you know, none of those issues. We've been fortunate. And so I think if you look at my kids on paper, they're model kids. They're very polite.
On paper.
But if you put them out in the real world, I don't know what would become of them. I think it would be very tough.
It's
for
like
them.
It's like having one of those wild animals that you bring in the house for a while, yeah, and you go, yeah, you really need to turn it loose. Yeah. But now it doesn't know anything.
No, it doesn't. This little, it's been spoon fed the whole time.
Right. Yeah. How is this raccoon supposed to live when it doesn't, yeah, know how to catch fish out of the stream?
I know. It's so true. It's
but
so true.
I have that argument all the time with people because I went to work really young. I mean, yeah, that's just, and by work I mean just whatever it took to make money. You want to make 50 cents? Go bag those leaves, you know. And, uh-huh, and having an older brother, he would go, "Come with me. We're going to cut grass. I'll cut the grass. You rake it because that way you won't cut your feet off." Okay, so you know, at 7, 8 years old, we've got a little lawnmower service, and you're learning the like, hey, if I want money, I got to do this.
Right.
And if I spend money, then I don't have it. And then I got to I got to work, and I really don't want to do that. So,
well, now, did you have an allowance?
Yes.
See, I did too. We didn't do this with, and I kind of insisted, but my wife sort of overruled. I wanted them to have an allowance so that they could budget, and they only knew that they could spend so much. My daughter's actually pretty good about saving. My son will spend every penny he has.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of I'm concerned that we didn't raise them knowing that they have to have limitations on and how to manage their money, basically.
Yeah. Didn't take them down and say at 15 we're going to open you a bank account.
They have bank accounts. That's the other problem. They have bank accounts, but now here's the thing: you have a birthday party, and every aunt and every uncle and every, is giving you $100, $50, and so. You know, it's pretty.
That used to be $5.
I know. It's inflation, but it's also because that's what we give to their kids, so they feel they're obligated. They got to give this to our kids.
So it's in a good way. You ought to write one of them a check for $1,000.
Just let them pass it around,
and
yeah,
then it all comes back to you.
It's like fruitcake.
Just
one. There's only one fruitcake. It just gets passed around to everybody. But yeah, I think that's been a mistake in our parenting, is that we didn't, because, but part of it is whatever budgeting I would have done by giving my kids an allowance would have been blown by every holiday and every, you know, Christmas and their birthday. And when they you know, rake it in $500-$600. Well, that just blows whatever, you know, $15 a week I'm going to give them as an allowance.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Right.
I don't even know what I would give a kid as an allowance these days.
I don't either. But I remember
it was a quarter. I got a quarter a week. And I'll tell you something. When I had a quarter a week, I had more in my savings account than I have today. When I made 25 cents.
You had to save them.
I can't explain how or why, but I got 25 cents a week. I had more in my savings account.
Here's how you know. Because when somebody handed you that quarter, it was always followed by the line, "Don't spend that all in one place."
Yeah, that's right. I took that to heart.
Don't spend that all in one place.
Yeah. So, well,
here's how I taught my son with the very early. With,
now, is your son a masculine, macho guy? Is he like a independent? And
yes.
Why are you looking down?
I was trying to think. My son is, yes, he's independent and very, very manly. Probably even more than his dad, because he's like, my son loves sports and follows all the teams. And one of my favorite things that I learned from you years ago was, I lack the sports gene.
Yeah. It just doesn't click for us. Yeah.
At all. I don't understand it. I don't get it.
Same way.
But my son is one of those, you want to go to the game? No. You know, I'm your dad. How many years have you known me?
Did he play sports as a kid?
He did.
And was he on a baseball team? Was he on Little League?
Baseball, football, basketball.
Wow.
He did all those. And then one day he kind of like, because I'm in art. I went to school on an art scholarship because I wanted to be an artist.
Wow.
So he discovered art and photography and then realized he didn't have to get hit and hurt and all the things that go along with sports. So it sort of moved away from him playing to him just liking and watching.
And were you supportive of him playing baseball? Would you go to every baseball game? Or were you the dad in the stands, you know, yelling, "Run"?
No. Every once in a while. I did go to games. I'd go when I could. I actually almost got ejected from one of his games because I was sitting next to a woman that was all I could do to keep from slapping her. So I was holding it all in because she was one of those parents that like, it's not your fault, good try, the pitcher's really bad, it's not your fault. And then one time she said it, I go, "You suck. No, you really suck. You need practice. Don't listen to your mother if the pitcher's really good." And the umpire actually came over and goes, "Sir, you need to keep it down. I go, you didn't tell her to keep it down. I started this whole little...
Because she was being positive and you were being negative.
Yeah, but I was being honest. You know what I mean? Remember being like, choke up on the bat, swing hard, you know, keep your eye on the... Not just, it's okay.
Everyone gets an award. Everyone gets a trophy.
That's the new thinking that was just annoying me of her being so positive and going, don't worry, at least go, don't worry, we'll work on it at home. I mean... Something, not just like, the pitcher's really bad. No, he's not. Your child sucks.
Yeah. Well, I think part of the reason why we didn't involve our kids in sports was, one, my wife and I didn't give a crap about sports. And the other is that it's the other parents. We just didn't want to just, it's like, I just don't want to be a part of the...
You want to come over to our house, have some beer, watch a couple films of the kids' games?
I'd rather shoot myself in the head, you know?
Oh, come on. I cook a pretty mean steak. I videotaped this game. We could watch the replay.
And it's not that they're not nice people. I'm sure they're lovely people. It's just we just didn't want to. And soccer seems to bring out the worst, too. The soccer moms, you know, mm-hmm. the prototypical soccer moms. Like, oh, God.
Okay, let's discuss soccer. While you said you brought it up.
Yeah.
You know, as I have friends that call it the field fairies, because it's not actually American sport.
Right.
You know, it's
right.
And we keep trying to force it on our kids here.
Right.
But it doesn't catch on. Why don't we just give up in America? Why don't we give up on soccer? We don't go crazy for it. We don't fill the stadiums. We don't have a little thing that goes when they score.
Right. I don't have a good answer for you because, like you, born deficient of the sports gene, so to me, all of them are useless. I mean, I like the idea of, you know, competition. I like the idea of sportsmanship. I like the idea of athleticism. I get all that. Mm-hmm. But the last thing I want to do is watch kids playing sports.
Right.
That's even below, like, college players playing sport. I mean, I just have no interest in it.
I tweeted the other day about how boring sports TV was when they show Little League baseball.
Wow, I didn't even know they do that.
See, every time you go into a bar or restaurant, it's on a sports station.
Right.
It doesn't matter what restaurant, there's sports on
TV.
Right. For whatever reason. Like, everybody in the world must love sports. Why would anybody care about a business ticker? Why would you care about having the news on? No, it's got to be sports. So that drives me crazy.
Yeah.
But anyway, I'm in a place and it was like televised Little League.
Wow.
And I thought, is that how bad it is that you need sports so bad you're going to
watch
a little kid strike out?
Now we've got, just like they did in cable news, it's like how many different ways can you tell the same story? Why does every network have to have their own knit? And we've got the liberal channel, we've got the conservative channel, we've got the channel that's pretending to be neutral, we got, you know, all these different cable channels for news, and they're all just equally abysmal. Sports, I think they've got now so many sports, you know, Fox just in the last couple of weeks bought the Speed Channel, which was all car stuff.
Uh-huh.
It was all kind of cool. And now it's become, they're calling it Fox Sports 1. There's Fox Sports 2. There's ESPN 1, 2, classic ESPN. They've got all these different channels now that now we're down to, we got to televise kids, you know, Little League games.
It's donkey poop chunking from Peru. I mean, they have all bizarre stuff like that. Like,
it's got, well, they got to fill the monster with something, right? They just have to. And that's what the complaint was about cable news is now we've got, when we had one 24-hour cable news channel, when CNN was the cable news channel, people thought, well, you can't do 24-hour. What are you going to do? I mean, there's not news breaking 24 hours a day. And then they opened up all the bureaus in, you know, Kabul and tried to find stories somewhere. Now you've got four networks that are doing that, you know, and it's at a certain point.
Well, I think that's been horrible for society.
Yeah.
Just in my humble opinion.
Yeah.
Because to back this up and give you a little story on it, one of my old radio partners would not let her kids play in the front yard. they weren't allowed. They play in the backyard,
right? Because like, they were going to get kidnapped and killed,
yeah. and scalped by whatever.
Right.
And don't you remember just jumping on a bicycle and riding the neighborhood until the street lights came on?
Right.
And how did we survive? How were we not just
abducted and molested and left for dead in a shallow grave?
How was that possible?
Yeah.
So we're having this discussion one day about her. She goes, "Well, a kid was just kidnapped," and I go, "Where?" And didn't you see the thing about the kid in Louisiana? I go, our neighborhood. We're talking about Denver.
Right.
She goes, that kid was that. You know, they still haven't found. I go, Denver. I kept going back. Denver in this town. She goes, but the news. So did you what? And I go, see, they frightened you.
Yeah.
They have showed this story over and over and over, and you think it must happen. Whatever. Must happen every 10 minutes. This kid's kidnapped. In your neighborhood. Nothing has gone
Millions
bad.
Of kids played in their front yard and nothing bad happened. And the one kid that, and almost always they know who it is. It's the, creepy cousin that,
Right, that stared at him at the party the whole time.
Yeah. And you're right. It makes news, and so people think it's all around. And it is. There is crime everywhere. It's all around us, and you should keep, teach your kids to...
Awareness.
Yeah, awareness, but
don't you remember being taught kick them in the crotch and scream and run? I remember my mom said, if somebody ever tries to grab you, you kick them in the nuts and you run. Yes, ma'am. It's like, but do parents still teach kids things like that?
It's funny. We're back to my terrible parenting skills. My kids didn't play in the front. Where I used to live, we were on a steep hill and there weren't very many kids. Where I live now, there are kids in this neighborhood, but I never see them out. They just don't go outside.
How wrong is that?
I agree.
I'm backing away from the mic. I thought of that one day, Christmas Day. I walked outside Christmas Day morning because where I live in Colorado is beautiful, and I thought, we'll go.
But it's a neighborhood filled with kids.
I got a lot of kids in my neighborhood. Went out, nothing. It's Christmas morning.
Yeah. You didn't get anything that you would play with out in the front yard and go on the street. And
shouldn't the streets just be filled with bicycles and pogo sticks and basketballs?
Right.
And you know what I mean? What have we done?
Yeah.
Would you give them a handheld computer so they don't have to exercise?
Yeah.
And I just thought that was one of the saddest. I remember thinking that to myself. This is one of the saddest sights I've ever seen. Is an empty neighborhood street on Christmas morning.
Well, now here's the question. Do you think in the future that our kids will look back and say, our childhood was wasted in front of the Xbox. We really should be getting our kids to go play out in the front yard. Or do you think once it's gone for good, and kids won't ever go back out and play in the street and get run over by the drunk who...
I don't think they'll go back out.
You don't think
no,
so?
No, I think it's one of those deals where it's the forest for the trees. You're too close to it. You don't see. You never knew it. Something you never know. You don't know you've lost.
Do you think it's also a class thing though? Because I think if you go into poorer neighborhoods, kids are out on the street. It's the middle class and better that kids stay and play Xbox.
You're definitely onto something. I hadn't really thought of that. I mean, I grew up very middle to lower.
That's how I grew up too. Yeah.
So. That's just the way it was. We played baseball with sticks and a rock.
Right. Yeah, but I mean, even today, I think if you go to lower class neighborhoods, working, with the working poor, I think you'll see kids on their big wheels and kids playing out in the street and tossing a football.
Mm-hmm.
It's the middle class where I think they got their Xbox and they've got their, texting. And
well,
so.
Here's the other part of the problem that I have caught. I don't know what the language version is on your show. I don't have any.
I don't either. Go. You can say whatever you want.
Okay. Here's where I think the part of where the shit hits the fan kind of deal is, and I've brought it up, and I've had people yell at me, and I've been unfollowed on Twitter. I think there's a big problem with the whole the single mother raising the kids. I'm not judging them right at this point. I'm just saying the way that it's done is that they're not being both parent. They're having. I'm a female. I look at things from a female. I'm not pushing you out. And I do understand in the past there's always been single parents. Always, fathers killed at war. A father was. But there always seemed to be an uncle or somebody to step in. There always was. Doesn't it? And I just seem like a lot of now. There's just like they're being raised by. don't go outside, don't do this, don't do that, you're going to get hurt, I wouldn't do that, I... Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do. I'm not
trying to be judgmental about it. I'm just trying to put the factor into play.
I get it, but I also think most of my kids' friends were in two parent households, although usually was like a second marriage. That's very common. Very few were from the first marriage, but there was usually a mother and a father, and they still kept their kid, you know, in bubble wrap,
yeah,
as I like to call it.
Right, right. Yeah, I see that.
But and I'm guilty of it too. And so even though I played out in the street and my wife played out in the street, our kids don't. And so I think it's more of a class thing where there aren't other kids in the even though there are kids in my neighborhood, there aren't kids out on the street playing. But I think if we were in a lower class neighborhood, I think there'd be more. Go into a minority neighborhood. Go into the ghetto, mm-hmm. and you'll see kids play down in the street. Even in, you know, Manhattan, in New York City, you see pictures of kids out running around like, yeah. you know, animals, you know, crazy
right.
animals.
Yeah, I did an interview with Joe Bonzel from the Oak Ridge Boys on, mm-hmm. on the podcast recently, and he is just a baseball fan, just loves baseball.
Where does he live? Where's what?
Well, he's from Philadelphia. I mean, he's from
Wow, I wouldn't have thought that. The Oak Ridge Boys?
Yeah, that's what I thought.
How did that happen?
Yeah.
Did he answer that?
Yeah, gospel. He was gospel music wow. that got him down the line to country music.
And he lives still in Philly? He still lives in Philly?
No, he's outside of Nashville now.
Makes more sense. All right.
But we were just talking about how the streets, I mean, that's what made me think of it. Like he said, every day the streets were filled with, you know, with baseball, and you had the rules because if you hit that building, you're safe. If you hit, you know, that.
Uh-huh. Even in an urban area. Right.
Right. How those streets were just, you played in the streets.
Right. Yeah, I don't know. We went wrong somewhere. I'm not sure where. Oh, well.
Can we get it back? What's your opinion? Can we get it back? Or is it too far gone?
I don't know. Because we've made the indoors so comfortable. Why would you go outside?
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. It's hot. I know.
It is.
It's daylight. It does that. It warms up hot. When that little orange object comes out.
I think it depends on where you are in the world. We're speaking from a very Western United States perspective in 2013. I wonder if you go to, we started off talking about London. If you go to Liverpool, are kids in the streets playing? I have a feeling they are. I have a feeling that we've isolated our kids more than any other generation. And I think you're on to something. We've become so fearful because the news has made us scared about the world around us.
It must be horrible.
And it is. It is a horrible and scary world. I once went in with the LAPD. I went with the helicopter air support, they call it. And I went on a Friday night. They go for 4 hours. That's the shift. Helicopter takes off, and they go around, and they go from incident to incident for 4 hours straight. They're never just, you'd think you, if you live in Southern California, you see helicopters, or I'm sure in Denver and here in Vegas, you'll see occasionally a police helicopter, and you think,
that light is scanning the ground.
Well, yeah, then you know they're onto something, right? You know that they found something. But sometimes you just see them, it looks like they're just out patrolling, you know?
Yeah.
When in fact, they are going incident to incident. They are never just you know, checking out the terrain. No. They go from incident to incident, and it's one terrible thing after another. And they're there to support the ground, you know, the officers in the cars and the motorcycles. And so they get a call, go to this place, go to, you know, South Central and go to Beverly Hills or wasn't Beverly Hills because they have their own police.
What are they like portable spotlights basically?
Kind of, just go fly over and keep the light on. They are because they see stuff that the cops on the ground can't see. And I'll give you a couple for instances. We got a call about I guess it was a stolen vehicle. And they had just stopped the stolen vehicle. The cops had just stopped the stolen vehicle. And we got there, and the cops were trying to get the guy out of the driver's seat. This is 15 years ago, so thinking of tactics has probably changed a little bit. And the crowd of people gathered. There must have been 60 people gathered because they saw the lights and the helicopters and the sirens. And they're telling this guy to get out of the car. The guy gets out of the car, and runs into the crowd. So the cops on the ground couldn't tell which guy it was that was driving the car. So when they fly in the helicopter, there's two people. One is the pilot and the other is the spotter. The ground cop says, "We don't know which guy was the driver." And the spotter says, "I'll tell you which guy it was." So they grab a guy from the crowd and they bring him into the middle of the street. And the spotter says, "That's not him." So they throw him back in. They grab another guy. They bring him out. And the cop says, "Nope, that's not him either." They bring a third guy out. And the spotter says, that's your driver." So I said to him after, you know, there was a little bit of silence because I didn't want to interfere. I said, "How did you know that was the guy and the other two guys weren't?" And he said, "From the color of his shoes." They had infrared. They have a forward infrared. Uh-huh. They call it a flare. Which everything that has that gives off light gives off a different intensity based on the color. So even though it was black and white, mm-hmm. he could tell from the color of the guy's shoes that those other two guys weren't the driver, but the one was with the shoe. Isn't that wild? Yep. It's like I never would have. Once that guy got into the crowd, there's no way I could have figured out which guy it was.
That's the old days. That's what he just disappeared into the crowd.
Right. You know? Yeah.
It's like when I watch Gunsmoke now, or I watch those old reruns of things. Yeah. You watch old reruns. Yeah. They're like, "He killed him. Hang him." Well, did you check the caliber of the gun? You know, one guy might have used a .45. The other guy, you know, there was never any kind of crime stuff in those old.
Right,
you know,
right. There's no CSI.
Like we walked in and he was standing over him with a knife. Well, was it the same knife? Was he about to cut the rope, or was he? You know, there was all that.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of that
justice was much easier back then.
Wasn't it much easier?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what
much quicker. I don't know if it was justice, but it was much easier.
But there was always even I'm watching it go. Was he shot with a rifle? You know, we found him with this dead guy, been shot. And you never hear the conversation. Was a pistol? Was he shot with a shotgun? I know you found him dead on the side of the road, but ask questions before you go. It must have been the one who killed him.
Yeah. Speaking of old shows, what's your favorite old show?
Oh, I do love Gunsmoke. I love watching old episodes of Gunsmoke. But I think my favorite old show is Dick Van Dyke. I can watch any rerun of Dick Van Dyke.
I would not have predicted that out of you. Wow. Why?
I think it was, they're like little mini movies. They were like, each was an individual filmed script. And I think all the TV shows back then were like that. Huh. If you watch Andy Griffith or any of those, they were little mini movies as compared to everything now is a one-liner in a set. You know, people don't talk.
Right.
Like they do on TV now.
Right.
If you watch a sitcom, you and I have not sit here and every line was a zing, 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 zing.
Right, right.
But there's been some amusing. That's what it was when those old, what those old shows were.
Uh-huh.
They would put them in a situation and then things would unfold and you go, "Bah, that was pretty funny."
Huh. Did you see Dick Van Dyke was in the news yesterday?
No,
did you see
it? I missed that.
You missed the story?
Uh-huh.
He was driving a car that caught on fire and he pulled to the side of the road and slumped over his steering wheel. This is in L.A., and people drove by and saw there was a car on fire with a guy slumped over, and they pulled him out. It was Dick Van Dyke, and it was a brand-new Jaguar, a Jaguar sedan that caught on fire, burned to the ground. I mean, the car was crisp, but he's okay. He survived, 89 years old.
What did he slump? What did he just go like?
I'm not sure what happened first, because he was on the side of the road. I wonder if the fumes from the burning car caused him to go unconscious, or if he was having some kind of he's 89 years old. Who knows what kind of episode he, you know.
But the last time I saw him, he seems pretty healthy for
an 89 year old. That's what everyone says. Well, you know why? He's got a 41-year-old wife.
There you go. It's like my girlfriend.
Now, is she your girlfriend or your wife?
No, it's my girlfriend. We live
I've been saying wife.
I know. I wear a ring. We have sort of have this agreement that, like, you know, we're a couple. Might as well act like it. I'm on the road. You know, I'm taken. You know.
Uh-huh.
So that's the only reason I didn't, because everybody says that too. I mean, everybody. And I don't want to be. If she ever,
well, you may have said to me girlfriend, and for whatever reason, I heard wife.
And so. I talk about wives in my act a lot.
Right.
That's because I've had three of them.
Three. Oh, yeah. I can see why you're a little red. A little gun shy.
Yeah. Yes. Uh-huh. Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, someone asked me if that was a wedding ring, and I go, "No, there's a skull on it."
Well, that's the perfect wedding ring.
You're right. If it ever happens, I'm just going to use
that one.
Till death do it. Yeah, death. That's right. But yeah, wow. That's. But I think having a younger spouse, friend, yeah, girlfriend yeah. keeps you more.
I keep telling my wife the same thing.
Yeah, yeah. That you need to get a younger.
Exactly.
One,
or... Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Doesn't she understand that?
She does under. That's the problem. She's too understanding.
She says, "Okay."
Yeah, yeah.
Well, then she could be like Mama-san. You know how you have the head geisha. Then you can have some younger ones.
I don't know how that works. I don't know.
I'm not really sure how it works either, but I do know there's the one, you know, you marry the one, and she kind of reigns over your lesser wives.
Well, then do you watch this show, Sister Wives?
I've seen it, but I have not.
That's here in Vegas. They moved here.
Yeah,
whole
but
family.
Didn't they get in trouble?
I mean, they got in trouble in Utah. And so that's why they moved here where no one cares.
But they live in separate houses. That's what I seem to remember.
They live in separate houses, and he's legally only married to one wife. The first one is the only real wife. The rest are, I mean, it's a polygamous marriage, but it's not on paper. I guess he doesn't have any actual time. But it's...
Have you noticed how they're all not very attractive? And I don't mean that in a bad way.
One is the newest one is. The youngest, newest one is not bad looking, but you're right. The other ones...
I think you can collect ugly women a lot easier than you can collect attractive women. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, yeah, yeah.
Do you want to be part of this women tribe?
But if
sure. why not?
But if you want a woman to really feel like she can let herself go, marry three others. You know?
Right. But I would think that would kind of keep them on their toes. Like
it could go either way.
Hey, bitch, you want to be at number one? You got to start keeping.
It could go either way.
You want to fix your hair, put a little makeup on. You know, you could be my Tuesday night girl. Because apparently they have one for every day of the week. Right?
Well, they don't talk about sex. That's their private business. But everything else, they're open book about. Well, the only thing interesting about having four wives is the sex.
Isn't it?
Right? That's the only thing we're interested in. We don't care that you, you know, co-parent, you know? Yeah. Co-parent.
We're co-parenting. Where did that phrase even come from?
Co-parenting. I don't know. It's not a phrase I've ever used. As liberal as I am, I don't use the phrase co-parenting. Oh, man.
Now, before we, I do want to point out that my story with you, I was going to when I moved to L.A. in, I think it was 93, 94, I didn't know this just the other day, you were pretty new on the KFI at that time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But see, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I came to L.A., I just turned on the radio.
I was always on the radio.
Yeah. I turned on the radio one day and, Mr. KFI, what was your the whole no screeners?
No guests, no topics, no screeners, no goofy sound effects, pre-recorded comedy, scripts, planted callers, or contrived viewpoints.
Boom, you had me from the get-go. Like, I seriously, I was like, oh my God, this is some of the best radio I've ever heard in my life. I was hooked. I assumed you had to be, or you were, and you still are to me, a radio god, because obviously how could you be Mr. KFI if you weren't an institution of the city? But apparently you go, yeah, I just kind of took the name.
Yeah. Well, it was my insurance policy was if the show sucked and blew up on the launch pad, I'd have another chance to host as Mark Germain. So
But see,
it was also really easy to remember. You know, I'd tell people my name. And we'd talk for 20 minutes, and they go, I'm sorry, what was your name again? And I just thought, well, my name isn't that, you know, foreign or ethnic or weird. It's Mark Germain, and yet people couldn't retain it.
Well, how is it Germain?
And so I just thought, you know, you can't forget. And at the time, radio used to be based, your ratings were based on people's ability to remember who they listened to because they had to fill out a diary.
Hence, Mudflap.
And I knew if I could just give them a hook, give them something simple that they can remember, and they also needed to know what radio station they were listening to. And I used to look at diaries. They keep the diaries in Virginia, and program directors go, is this too inside radio?
No, not at all, because...
I don't know if you're being sarcastic.
It's for me.
Well, now they have the people meter, so there's a device that listens and knows what you're listening to.
And
right?
does not do well. It is not a believable
It's a very small sample, whether it was diaries or people meters, and so to me, it's all voodoo. It's all number crunching. But it was voodoo we lived and died by, and when you got good ratings, you're like, this is a great system. And when you had shitty numbers, like, well, I didn't get, you know, obviously obviously my listeners weren't surveyed, right? That's what that was.
Yeah, obviously one of our people meter went on vacation.
Exactly. People do say stuff like that. So it cuts both ways. But in the days of paper diaries where people literally would write in, I listened from 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. on KFI to Mr. KFI, right? That's
right.
What they had to know.
It's brilliant.
They had to know the time.
Brilliant.
They had to know the dial, you know, the dial position, and they had to know the call letters of the radio station. Well, most people, if you ask them, even fans of shows, what station is Howard Stern on? They didn't know.
No idea. I couldn't tell you, but I listened to Howard at the time. So when I lived in L.A., he was on, but I don't remember what station.
And you're a radio guy. You don't remember what radio station. So I figured you couldn't screw up that you were listening to Mr. KFI on KFI. You didn't think you were listening to Mr. KFI on KABC.
Yeah.
But we used to get diaries that would say things like, I listened to Rush Limbaugh, who was only on KFI, on KABC, and KABC would get the credit for it.
Because whatever was written.
Whatever was written. It didn't matter who the person, it mattered what radio station they were listening to. So I came up with this idea for multifold reasons. The main reason was I wanted to have another chance to host a show if I screwed up. The other was I knew for long-term radio success, I had to have some. And that's why there were, you know, radio personalities like Charlie Tuna, you know.
Yeah.
And there were guys that whose names were easy to remember. They were
Bob the Bellboy Johnson. Just all those, all that kind
right,
of.
Right, 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 right. So, were you only Mudflap on the radio, or would
Yeah,
Steve?
It was. Mudflap was really the name. When I started radio, it was under my real name. They wanted a comic, and they hired me, and I was Steve McGrew. I was Steve McGrew on the show. And then I've been on the air about 6 months. And my partners at the time were teasing me about growing up on a farm. My dad raised cattle, and the way this even got started was we were at the rodeo, broadcasting from the rodeo, and my partner was talking about the cows, that brown cow. There's this pretty brown cow, and I go, you mean the Jersey? Yeah, what kind of cow? And I was like, You work for a country station, and you don't even know that's a Holstein, that's a Jersey, that's a brown, And so they started teasing me about being the hick on the show.
Uh-huh.
And the program director heard it and called me in. He goes, you know, you do need like a nickname. A nickname would be great. Some kind of something, you know, country. Think about it. Let's talk about it. Give it a thought. And he called me the next day and he goes, Mudflap, we're going to call you. I go, well, thanks for letting me think about it. Thanks for letting me pick my own name. Because apparently a lot of program directors do that anyway. They just go, you're going to be Bob Meat Hackett on the whatever. You
know. Well, music and talk were very different worlds. So, yeah. And music is because talk, you had to be a person. Music, you had to be a personality, right?
Yeah, right.
So, I can see why, you know, even today, I'm sure there's a lot of people that have, you know, especially if you're a morning guy, you know, you're the Flippy and Jimmy show, you know, it's
right.
Always.
Right. Right. Yeah.
You've been on enough of those shows to know that it's
right.
Like.
Ding, yeah. Ding, ding, ding.
And I like when they compete with you to trying to outfunny you. When you're
exactly. I love that. Now, is this your first time in town? You've been here before? What have you seen since you've been here?
Couldn't you give them a list of here's the things you cannot say to me, right?
Yeah.
Here's 20 questions to not ask me.
Ask me. Yeah. Well, are you anything like Jeff Foxworthy? I couldn't tell you how many times I got
asked.
And you know my answer to that used to be no. I'm funny. I know that's bad, Jeff, if you ever hear this and anybody ever plays it. But I just got tired of being like, I always constantly got compared to, you know, are you like those blue collar boys?
Oh god.
Are you like that? No. I may have an accent, but if you go listen to my act, it has nothing to do with. So I'm out with mama and we're riding in the truck, you know.
Yeah. I've seen your act a couple times, and I'm always surprised how different. Even I saw you one time recently, and then I saw you like 2 months later, and your act was almost, I'd say, 95% new material. So you're constantly writing new material.
I try really hard.
But if I saw you 2 days in a row,
you'd still see different shows.
Wow!
Like it may not, like you said, it may not be exactly. It might be part, and I always think there's certain things I need to do. Like if I don't do the pig sex bit, then people go, "Oh, you didn't do the pig sex bit." You know, there's certain things I feel like I have to do. It like going to the Beatles and they didn't play
Hard Day's Night.
Yeah, right. Yeah, right. You know what I mean? Right. Not that I'm comparing. I am comparing myself to people. But that's what I mean. That's what you have to do certain things.
Right.
But I think every day, if you get out and live your life, you have something new to talk about if you're a genuinely funny person.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a lot of comics that can just be funny with their script. They know their stuff. But I think that's one of the reasons, and I was told this by a couple different program directors, I'm one of the few comics that actually transitioned well to radio, that they've tried it several times. But you have to be quick. You actually have to listen. You have to respond. You have to
Be interested in the news. And, you know, most comics are interested in the news only to the extent that they can get a joke from it. Right?
Right, right.
And I know talk programmers that thought, well, stand-up people are funny, and we need to be funnier. Let's get a stand-up person, and it usually doesn't go. Because, frankly, they don't have much beyond their act.
Right. You know? They're the words that they have written, the words that they've memorized.
Which are tight and clever and good, but, you know, give them. And there have been a couple people. You know, I guess Dennis Miller has transitioned well.
He's done very well.
Because he's interested in the news.
And he's gone conservative.
He's gone, yeah, I know. You and I. He's gone conservative, but I... Do you think he was funnier when he was liberal?
You're going to put me on the spot now. I've always enjoyed Dennis. I thought he was funny, but I always thought a lot of times the references just seemed like...
Oh, a little obscure, but that's always been the act.
That's been his thing. Yeah, but there's a lot of times like...
Very intellectual,
dude, I got it, but half the world didn't.
Right. And I'm trying to think of who else. Stephanie Miller was a stand-up, I guess, when she transitioned to radio, and she's gone very liberal. Who else? Who else that we can sort of look at and say they were a stand-up and now they're... I know a couple talk show hosts that have tried stand-up, and that was not good.
They tried to go the other way?
Yeah.
Yeah. I've seen that a couple times, too.
Like, that does not work well.
Well, I see it with DJs a lot. Well, that's one of the reasons I turned down... Several years before I did radio, I got offered morning radio. Because I used to do the Bob and Tom show a lot. And they kind of liked me and hooked me up with... they go, you got to talk to the owners of this station. And when I got offered, I was like, no, see, I'm a comic. I'm not a DJ. I'm not going to do it. And then one day it dawned on me, I want to be an actor. I want to have a sitcom. I'd love to do that. So what's the difference between going to a studio and going to a studio? You know what I mean? If I go to a studio to act, I'm not me. If I go to a radio station and put on a character, I'm not me either. So it finally dawned on me, I think I want to do this. But I'd always had in my head DJs weren't funny. Because how many times have you ever seen a DJ open a concert or come out and do the, hey, everyone, well, this is sucking. Have a t-shirt, and I'm off the stage. Because you can almost see that they think they're going to be, it's going to be.
Right. No, audiences turn on you fast, right?
Yeah.
As they should.
And they should.
Yeah.
But I saw that so often in my head, I thought, I'm not going to be a DJ. Now, here's what I find out later on. I found out being a DJ hurt my comedy credibility. I did find out later on that some of the clubs had thought, you know, he's a DJ, he's not a comic. When I was working on booking, he's a DJ. I go, no, I've already been on, I've toured, I've got right. my, I've been was on every Evening of the Improv, Comedy on the Road, MTV Half. I did every one of those those shows. I took radio as a job.
Right. Right.
But in people's heads, perception, like they told me in Denver, they go, well, I used to sell out every show. Like I would just sell out in Denver. And then some of the audiences got a little lighter and lighter. And part of it was people's perception was, well, you know, he's a radio DJ.
He's a DJ trying to be funny.
DJ trying to be
a comic. As opposed to,
comic
who was moonlighting as a DJ.
See?
Yeah. I can see that. That's tough. So you're back to doing comedy, which is what you originally did and what you love. And... which gives you more immediate satisfaction?
Stand-up. I love doing stand-up. I love radio. It's one of the reasons I love doing the podcast. When I figured out that I could still do this and do both, I like being able to entertain without having somebody go, could you step into my office when you get on?
Yeah, no, not having limitations is that's freeing. A paycheck and health insurance would be nice, but it is very liberating to be able to still have an outlet for our
craziness. Don't you feel the same way?
Yeah, definitely. And
Because at what point, even in this conversation, would a programmer knocked on the window?
Well, how many breaks would we have had to take by now?
See?
Number one, and to me,
stop the momentum.
Yeah.
Stop the.
And now that's one of the reasons why I'm listening to less and less broadcast radio. I mean, I'm listening to virtually none, but it's abusive to ask people to listen to sit through 6-7 minutes of commercials and traffic and weather, and it's like,
yeah. Here's something else I thought of just the other day. I was talking to somebody about radio and how your program directors now all want you to plan and tease tomorrow's show.
Mm-hmm.
Tease tomorrow's show.
Mm-hmm. Tease ahead.
Tease ahead. Coming up, we'll tell you how.
Yeah.
Lindsay Lohan is back in the news.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what? You just mentioned it. I Googled it on my phone.
Right.
Now I know.
Right.
I don't give a shit about
tomorrow's
show.
Right. How about being entertaining in the moment?
Right, this second. That's what, and I don't think radio is grasping that in this day and age. They're still living in an older world, the way the model worked before. Because anything you say, I better tell you right now, there's no.
I was just going to say what programmers think is the way to get people to listen tomorrow is to tell them what you're going to do tomorrow, get them excited about it. If you ask me, the best way to get people to listen tomorrow is to do a great show today. Right?
Right. If I enjoyed it, what? I'll probably come back tomorrow.
I probably will.
I'll come back tomorrow. Well, I enjoyed the guy. I wonder what his take on Dick Van Dyke slumping over the car is going to be. I would love to hear his take on that.
Yeah. I'm sorry to share that bad news with you, but it turns out he's okay.
That's all that matters.
That's all that matters.
That's
that.
See, theme songs, another thing. Talking about.
Oh, yeah.
Well, how many shows have theme songs?
My favorite old show has one of the great theme songs, even though there's no words, is Rockford Files. Rockford Files theme. Right?
Yeah. Didn't it start with one word, though? Didn't the answer machine, that's how the song started?
Oh, it was always, the answering machine, I'm not here right now, leave a message, and then someone would leave a message like, you owe me money.
Yeah.
You know, I'm going to find you.
Great opening.
Such a great show. And you know what I was Googling the other day is, do you remember the actor who played Angel, who was like...
The curly-haired, black-haired, curly-haired guy.
And he's still around and still acting. He was in a movie last year. And I forgot his name. I just looked it up the other day. But
Google bitches. That's what I say on my show. Google bitches.
What a great actor and what a great character. One of the great television characters. Even though he wasn't in that many episodes, whenever he was in, he was just such a lowlife and so duplicitous. And, he even though Rockford was his friend and would help him out, he would... if it would help him in any way, he would, rat him out.
Right.
And, someone was after.
He was the white Huggy Bear.
Kind of. Yeah. Kind of. Although Huggy Bear was actually pretty helpful to Starsky and Hutch.
Mm-hmm.
When they needed to get the word on the street, they went to Huggy Bear. He was.
Right.
Right?
Right. Kind of like in the new Hawaii 5-0, had they go to Kona. What is his name?
I don't know. I don't watch that.
Oh, you don't
show.
Watch the new
no,
Hawaii 5-0?
No. Is it any good?
Oh, I love it. I love it.
Do they still
Hawaii
say 5-0. Book 'em, Dano?
Yeah. Yeah.
My brother was in film school at UCLA, and one of the assignments was to re-edit a episode of Hawaii 5-0. And to, basically show that you can change the show, you can change the dynamics of the show just by re-editing, certain scenes and putting things in different order, and it just changes everything. So one of the things my brother did was he changed the ending. Instead of Book 'em Dano, he changed it to Dan'em Booko.
That was his catchphrase.
Yeah, that was it. Dan'em Booko.
I just always loved the fact that they, when the old episodes, it is sort of like that new now, but it'd be like Wing Chong as Ho Fat and, Ming Ling as Lo Mang. It's like, I don't know. It doesn't make any difference what Asian name you've changed it to in the script.
You just kept the same name.
Right.
It still is that.
Right. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. That's a good point.
But I love the new show. And I think a lot of that has to do with the scenery. I think shows need to go back to. Part of the feel of the show is the establishing shots.
Well, and that's what they said about Breaking Bad, that it really wouldn't be this. Originally, they were going to have the show take place. Do you watch it?
No, but I have friends that say, you're an idiot, you should be watching
it. It's so good. But they were originally going to do it like in Fontana, You know, it was supposed to be in Southern California. And then they got all these production credits. You know, that's why all the Runaway production. Well, New Mexico. New Mexico gave tremendous tax incentives to film the show there. And they just realized, you know what? Albuquerque's kind of a weird, cool, interesting place. Let's just have it take place in Albuquerque.
Yeah.
And it really... The show, part of the reason why it works is because it takes place in Albuquerque.
In a quirky little place, a quirky little scenery. Yeah. That's one of the reasons I like even Sons of Anarchy is sort of the same way, that the town feels real, the shots that they do. Do you watch that show?
No, no.
Oh, wow, what?
Well, I'm going to really turn in my man card and have to be remasculated because my favorite shows right now...
Mm-hmm. Pretty Little Liars?
No, worse. Real Housewives.
Oh, my God. Of anything?
No, I don't. I didn't like the Real Housewives of Atlanta. I didn't care for that one. But the Real Housewives of Orange County, Real Housewives of Beverly Hills, Real Housewives of New York, I've watched every episode. I can tell you all their names and what their backstories are and their kids, and it makes me want to put a
bullet
in my mouth. And it's horrible. And every time I watch it, I say to my wife, this is it. This is the last time we're watching it. And then they do a preview of the next week. You're talking about teasing ahead. Uh-huh. They do a preview of the next week's episode. And I'm like, okay, I'm coming back for more. Even though I said I'm out, I'm back in.
Because you've got to see what happened.
Well, you have to see.
How did she not know the other girl was going to find out if she did that? How did she not know that if she bought those shoes?
It's the worst show, and it's so brilliantly done. And I've heard more and more, and I've talked to people who are producers of reality television, and what you find out is there's no such thing. It's all scripted. Even though they're not handed, here's the words you're going to say, they're set up. They're plied with alcohol. They just do things to know that they're going to get conflict and drama, and it is very compelling. It's very compelling.
Right.
You haven't watched any of those shows?
I watched, early on, I watched Real Housewives of Orange County. Because
that was the first one.
It was the first one,
right.
And I kind of got into it, and then I kind of got out of it.
It's they're so slick and so... I'm sorry, I interrupted.
No, but that's okay. That's but I was going to go where you were going with the non-reality. The original Aussie show, the Meet the Osbournes or whatever, the guy that did that, C.B. Harding, I know him, and that was a real reality show. That was 24-hour, like cameras everywhere in the house, and there was a lot of editing, just a whole lot. And he said that the way they did that show was they filmed everything, but they did put them in situations like...
You're
going to go deep sea fishing. Ozzy would never go, but they just did it and filmed it. But you see a lot of TV today is totally scripted reality. Like you can tell when you watch the Kardashians that they're trying to act. You can actually see in their face that, what? What do you mean you didn't tell him that?
Yeah, see,
you
know? I'd like to say I'm too smart for that. Like I could see through that, and I don't watch the Kardashians. But the Housewives totally has me hooked. And I know all the backs. I know that it's being juiced. You know, I know that it's being ginned up. I know that they're showing the video of, did you see what she said about you? How do you respond to that? You know, you know that that's taking place before they go, okay, go, action.
Yeah.
Right? But I mean, just, and it, one of the things that was explained to me was, here's how you know it's set up when, the, you know, there'd be two people at, they're having a meal and then the person they're talking about just comes in.
Happens to walk in at the
restaurant.
Just
happens to come in that they're talking about. Well, she's mic'd up. So they knew, you know, just from the production standpoint that...
I hadn't thought of that.
I just thought maybe
I was thinking, the overhead mics must have picked up their fight.
No, they're all mic'd up. They're all mic'd up. That's why it's all funny. We gotta wrap it up here.
All right.
So I have to make a phone call.
Did we make it? How long did we do?
We did an hour.
Sweet. Sweet.
But hang on, I'll tell you exactly. We actually did an hour and 2 minutes. So
that's perfect.
Yeah.
Timer's going off and everything.
Yeah, actually, this is another phone call.
Oh,
but
you got business things to do.
I do. Oh, Jesus.
Look at that. The timing is perfect. So
all right.
We'll just wrap it up. You want to wrap up your version?
Well, I always say, till whenever the next show is. If we do it Tuesday, so then maybe till Thursday night.
Yeah.
And why don't you do everything I wouldn't do right here on TalkRadio1.com?
Okay, then I always do. Well, I think, I hope you had a great time. I appreciate you tuning in, listening. God bless America, and go listen to some Oak Ridge Boys. I bid you adieu.